My dear brethren, sisters, friends of this vast congregation and of the unseen radio audience, a recent notable book presents the life philosophies of 21 living persons of international renown. Each contributor interprets the meaning of life differently. The essays resemble the frayed, flying ends of a rope. Each a strand of truth, but of little strength and no organization. The resulting picture is one of utter confusion, a reflection of the world's present chaos in matters pertaining to human conduct and consequent happiness. One of the writers accepts God. The others ignore or deny the existence of an intelligent power higher than man. Several imply that as a means of winning human happiness, Christianity has failed. Such airy opinions, commonly current, explain our distracted world. Christianity has not failed. Human history from the days of Adam reveals that if but one gospel principle is used, under any name, mankind is blessed and prospered. Man's peace and prosperity have risen or fallen with the degree of his obedience to gospel truths. The failure of the Christian world to reach its heart's desire lies with the Christians, not with Christianity. As an ornament, Christianity has no special claim for consideration. It blossoms into human value only when used. Man has failed to accept the life-giving truths of the gospel. That has been his failure. Thereby hangs the whole tale of human misery. It would be a beneficent experience to have Christendom practice the truths of the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the moral world, the ever-constant battle is between good and evil. Man is a free agent. Whenever he has chosen good, he has approached joy. When he has followed evil, the ills of the world have overtaken him. The present chaos on earth, of warfare and its attendant horrors, are of man's own making. He has chosen to allow evil to rule him, and he must pay the price of his folly. The first and most fundamental error has been that in man's mighty search for the truth of the universe, which has made our civilization, he has confined himself almost wholly to the material world. Men are victoriously certain of physical laws. There they face the light. But confronting spiritual laws, they stand in cowed uncertainty, facing the darkness. Therefore, men have fumbled in the dark, failing to find the road they would travel. In fear, they have been set for constant battle. A tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye, has become their slogan, however carefully veneered with honeyed words. And war and contention, famine and pestilence, blood and horror, have filled the earth. Examples of our one-sided knowledge are many. The giant star Betelgeuse, millions of light years away in space, has been weighed and measured. But the intelligent domination of the universe remains a subject of controversy. The law of gravity, by which all things are held together and reduced to orderly motion, is a schoolboy's commonplace. But that man is on earth under an intelligent plan is held to be unproved. The assembling of electrons into atoms and atoms into molecules to form the world known to our senses is as a clearly painted picture. But the origin and destiny of man are to most men among the mysteries of life. The purpose of adaptation in the coloring of a butterfly's wing is understood, but human life is often held to be purposeless. An anthill or a beehive shows laws of relationship for common good. But human conduct is measured only by personal expediency, ever-changing, never fixed or certain. Science gives no hint as to whether dynamite shall be used to destroy a defenseless city or whether steel shall be made into swords or plows. It is no wonder that as a result, the ethics of our day is the ethics of self-preservation, hard, self-willed, material, the ethics of every war, and that the history of civilized times is strung upon the crimson trail of blood. There can be no hope of permanent peace or true prosperity on earth until men turn their thoughts and power to the elucidation of the spiritual problems and issues of life. Intelligent man has the power to discover spiritual as well as physical laws. Knock and it shall be opened, seek and you shall find. If as much time and energy were spent to search out the true basis of human conduct as are given to any one subject in our schools or in our social and political activities, the foundation of faith would be well laid. Then the existence of God, for example, would be known with the same assurance that the sun shines. An equally basic cause of the world's confusion is a lack of agreement concerning the spiritual truths possessed by humanity. In the world of physical phenomena, men generally see alike. But in the study of the spiritual domain, personal opinions and philosophical abstractions are allowed entrance. There is constant quibbling about definitions. For example, God, the first of man's spiritual concerns, is to one group, though of infinite majesty, a personal being of the order of man. To another, a personal being of an order wholly different from man. To another, an impersonal, beneficent power filling the universe, and to yet another, only one of the many forces of nature. Contention and warfare arise over varying definitions or descriptions of beliefs. Unity of belief must precede full peace on earth. This can be done if men will shed their preconceived opinions and make truth the sole objective of their search. The simple tests of truth are as applicable in the spiritual as in the physical world. To convert the world's battlefields into cornfields, strife into peace, and fear into faith and trust, men must earnestly seek out and come to agreement concerning three fundamentals. The true God, man's relationship to God and his fellow men, and the purpose of human existence. Only as certainty about these is achieved can humanity hope for release from the reign of terror upon the earth. First, men must find God if peace shall rule. To millions of people, he's but a name of no real consequence. The leaders of one great nation have seriously proposed the return to heathen, man-made gods. The true God may and can be found. It is not difficult. Hosts of earnest men and women have found him and know that the universe is directed by a dominant, yet comprehensible, intelligent, creative, loving being who, as a personal being, can and does speak to his children on earth. Whoever finds God wins certainty and conquers fear, the ancient enemy of man, the distilled essence of uncertainty. A sense of power and justice comes to him who learns that there is no chance in the universe, but that the laws of nature are the laws of God, and that humanity lives under a system operated by an intelligent mind. To find God is humanity's first need. How many of you in this vast congregation, seen and unseen, have learned to know him? Second, many errors, many sorrows of man are due to a false conception of man's relationship to the Lord and his fellow man. There can be but little respect for human welfare or life if man is but a higher animal, an accidental intruder on earth, or a creature of God made at his pleasure, as children make mud pies. Man is a very son of God, begotten of God. He was with the Father in the beginning. Since he's of divine pedigree, with a spark of divinity within him, he rises immeasurably in the world of things. Then the brotherhood of man, spoken of so lightly, often with a sneer, acquires a profound meaning. All men are children of God, brothers in fact, of the same divine pedigree, with the same high destiny, under the same loving guidance of the Father of the spirits of men. Then every man must assume some of God's own responsibility in caring for the children of men. A person cannot let his very brothers go hungry, unclothed, shelterless, or bow down in sorrow. He cannot be cruel to them and be true to his royal descent. Had this true relationship among men been fixed in human minds, fewer bombs would have fallen on Europe. Again do we of this vast audience, seen and unseen, look upon our fellows as our very brothers and strive to give them brotherly help. Third, the true purpose of life must be understood. When the idea of chance in the universe is driven out, purpose in all things steps in. The life of man on earth is purposeful. Mortal life is part of a divine program for the eternal progress of man. The earth is designed for man's progress, and man's efforts should be in harmony with this purpose. There would be no warfare if that purpose were understood and held inviolate among mankind. May I ask each of you, is your life ordered for progress? These are the truths the world needs to know and accept. The existence of God, the real brotherhood of man, and an intelligent purpose in life. Upon these foundations, peace, plenty, and prosperity, and all the gifts of our bounteous earth would be available to all men. No longer then would man drift upon the ocean of uncertainty. The course of his life's voyage would be laid out before him. His life's journey guided by knowing and doing, by faith and works, would lead him to the house of happiness. Another question presents itself. How do these high truths found and accepted express themselves in human lives? How may those who shall bring peace upon earth be recognized? What quality sums up Christian living? There's a sure, unfailing mark of the true followers of Jesus the Christ. This mark is the power to forget oneself in the needs of others. We call it unselfishness, the highest achievement of man. It is the only means by which swords shall be beaten into plowshares and earth become as paradise. Should we not in this trying day search our own hearts? We need go no farther. Are we ready to give of our surplus, to give of ourselves to those in need? Is it joy to us to give to the Lord that which he requests of us? Is there unselfishness in our homes? Does kindness rule there? Does an unselfish love direct our family life? Then we have made the beginning of the world's conquest for peace. What about our neighbor? Are we solicitous of his welfare? Do we look charitably upon his weaknesses? Do we recognize his virtues without jealousy? Do we try to love him? In our business affairs, do we refuse to take even lawful advantage of our fellow man? Will we divide possible profits with him? You shepherds, officials of the church, are you true fathers to the flock, giving love and more love to your brethren in your charge? These are the simple, unfailing tests. If this congregation, as followers of the Prince of Peace, would order their lives from selfishness, a notable beginning would be made toward world peace. others seeing the beneficent results would follow our example, and the spirit of goodwill would spread among men. Shall we not resolutely try to do so? Soul lifting is a sequence of events when unselfishness rises in the human heart. When the real brotherhood of man is accepted, when there is a surrender to the divine program, charity and mercy soon flow from the unselfish man. He looks with forgiving compassion upon the weaknesses of others. He seeks to succor all who are in need. Such service begets love, the impelling principle of divine action. Peace is the child of love, the peace of soul that frees man to progress towards the likeness of God. Thus is the happy ascending sequence: unselfishness, charity, love, peace. All creation is pleading, praying, and weeping that unselfishness may be established among men. In contrast, how repulsive is selfishness. In its godless world of uncertain chance, men are brothers only by courtesy, and rather, they're enemies from birth. Each for himself is the slogan. The evil in man blossoms into cruelty, at home, in business, even in his imagined loves. The firstborn of selfishness is greed, gripping at the mouth, a never satisfied appetite for material possessions, however acquired. More and more is greed's cry. The world's political history is mainly the story of man's unappeased greed. When defeated, as needs must be in a greedy world, greed is transmuted into hate of all who stand in his way or do better in a grasping world, a sour hate of life itself. Then as night follows day, comes war, hate's own misshapen child, unending warfare, hidden in human hearts, or spouting famine and pestilence over sodden fields of battle, until the hearts of men are stilled with dread, despair, defeat, and all the other devils that lead to death. Such is ungodly downward sequence. The world's enemy, since Cain took the life of Abel, selfishness, greed, hate, and war, pouring sorrow over the earth. It is folly to build great armaments of steel for defense or offense, and fail to build the mightier weapons that issue from obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of peace. Warships, airships, or diplomacy may end the war, but warfare among nations or business leaders or neighbors or in families will not cease until men obey his word and seek unselfishly and in might to love one another. Let it not be forgotten that the winning of peace for the world is a personal responsibility. I must order my life for peace, as you must order yours. The units of a nation are the individual citizens. In the end, as they are, the nation will become. For each one of us is the message, I am the maker of peace. Some will say that man is incapable of discovery of spiritual truth and of sufficient unselfish action to bring peace upon earth. That is but sounding brass, the challenge of unbelief. There is in every man a deep store of power, which when drawn upon, makes men mighty for high endeavor, and gives more than ordinary human strength. Out of the unseen world, that fount is replenished, it never runs dry. It is the world's pity that so few use it, for it gives not only power to obey and to do, but courage, hope, understanding, faith, love, and all other virtues and gifts of heaven. Man of divine pedigree can perform divinely acceptable works when in prayer to God he draws upon the well of inner power with which every man is endowed. Peace will come on earth as the children of earth use this divinely given power within them according to the requirements of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which offers the only practical approach to peace and happiness on earth. These, brethren, sisters, friends, are all old truths but it is well to talk about them in a day when they seem to have been forgotten. They are the foundations of peace. The Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints possessed a divine knowledge and authority, follows humbly in the footsteps of his master, the man of Galilee, and pleads with his members and all men to turn to truth and righteousness so that peace may descend upon the earth. May it be so, I pray in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.